It's not science. It's not gambling. It's both.
Welcome to the Science Slot Machine, a dangerous game of science, research, luck, and improvisation.
This podcast is brought to you by students of the Science and Technology Studies Master Program at the University of Vienna. Even though gambling is largely forbidden here, we take our chances. Every episode, we pick a random topic from science and technology suggested by you, dear listeners.
Then two teams split up to do research on this very topic from an STS perspective. In the end, the two teams present their findings, whether it's dog breeding or the history of sex toys. What a dangerous, thrilling, and insightful game this is. Now it's time to send us your topics. Pick whatever comes to your mind. We will deal with it, even if it's obscure or very niche. Challenge us. Simply send us an email at scienceslotmachine@gmail.com. Again, it's scienceslotmachine@gmail.com. No spaces. We look forward to hearing from you. Hey everyone, Julia here. Welcome to the official random draw of the first topic of the Science Slot Machine. I'm currently sitting in my recording studio, aka my laundry room, for optimal sound quality, and I'm about to pick the topic for the first episode. But before I do that, I want to take a couple minutes to introduce two new members of the team, Patrick and Costa. So just going back to our same intros from last time, can you guys tell me a bit about yourselves, where you come from, your academic background, and any past experiences with gambling? Costa, do you want to go first?
Yeah, thank you, Julia. I want to go first. And first, thanks to all of the team of the Science Slot Machine that Patrick and me are welcome to this podcast. My name is actually Constantine, and I'm called Costa most of the time. I come from a small town in Bavaria, which is called Landshut. And actually, Borny is also from there, which we just found out while we were studying together. But
I know that place. I know that place.
Yeah, but before I started the STS master, I did study sociology in Vienna. This is why I moved there and then stumbled upon the STS master, which I really enjoy. And so I'm really looking forward to this podcast and further studies and all the research we're going to do in this exciting project. My experiences with gambling are quite okay, I would say, because I have been to casinos sometimes. I played roulette a little bit, and I played blackjack, which I really enjoyed. I actually earned a little bit of pocket money with blackjack some time ago. But in general, I wouldn't say I'm a big casino player, but I like the surrounding of the casino, and also in general, gambling is fun.
Okay, cool. Thanks so much. And Patrick, you're up.
Yeah, hey guys. Also from my side, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited about this, actually. I am from the Netherlands. And, well, I mean, as a Dutch guy, let's generalize, I had to kind of capitalize on this great opportunity, of course. I have a background in robotics, which I did a bachelor in the Netherlands. And after that, I first decided to start a master in electrical engineering. But it only took me about a month and a half before I realized that that was not at all what I really wanted to do in my life. So what I did back then is take a gap year, get a low-key restaurant job, find out what it is that I want to do. And then I stumbled upon this opportunity in Vienna, the science, the STS department. I signed up and they granted me admission. So that was great. And now we're here. Now is now.
Now we're here.
I do not have a lot of experience with gambling. I did some tryouts, but I realized quite soon that it wasn't my thing. That is to say, I kind of sucked at it. I was only losing money. I went to a casino twice or three times, I think, mainly because I just got dragged in there with friends of mine that really wanted to go, but it was not my thing. I did a little bit of betting on football or soccer matches, as you say in proper American English. but that also never really worked out for me.
I think that's usually the case for most people, but
I can definitely confirm that I also tried it. Yeah.
I mean, that's how the system works, of course. You're not supposed to win, I guess.
right.
And yeah, I mean, in a philosophical sense, we could argue that a lot of things in life are gambling, of course. I mean, taking risks, moving to a different country, starting to study something completely different than you did before. It's also an investment, both time and money-wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a risk, and you don't know how it's going to work out. So in that regard, I would say that, yeah, also that counts as gambling. And so far, it's working in my favor. So I'm really happy with that.
Maybe this is a little safer form of gambling, or I don't know, depends how you look at it. But thanks so much to both of you. We're really excited and happy to have you on the podcast. So Patrick will be joining Harry and Kat on Team Cherry, and
yay, Costa
and Costa will be joining Borny and Robbie on Team Banana.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Welcome, Costa. Welcome to the banana tea.
Thank you very much. One sentence to bananas. My favorite ice cream is banana split, and I love bananas.
Banana split is like our national dish.
Yeah.
The national dish of Landshut.
Exactly.
Okay, so now that everyone is familiar with each other, let's get back to the big reveal. While we're audio recording the topic being selected right now, we've also decided to make a video of it. So I'm taking a video of myself right now in my high-tech studio, which you can check out on our Insta page at science_slotmachine. And we also just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who took the time to listen to our trailer episode and send us your topic suggestions. We're all super appreciative of that, because we couldn't do these next episodes without those suggestions. So from all of us on the podcast team, thank you so much. Okay, now the moment everyone's been waiting for. I have all the topics. I think we received about 20 or just under 20 topics. I have them all in a... I know, ooh, it's a good turnout. I have them all in a hat, which you can see on the video if you watch, and I'm going to select a topic. So drum roll, please. The topic is Controlling, Monitoring, Tracking Pigeons in Vienna by Peter
Moore. Oh my God.
Nice.
No way.
We definitely glitched out our system capacity here, but that was I love the topic. I love it.
Wait.
The euphoria is too high.
Really, I love it. This was my favorite topic that we got. This is amazing.
It's also by far the most random one, and I'm kind of happy that that's the one that came out.
And we got Kat's wish. We're local. We're going to be studying something here. Great.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is going to be interesting, I think.
It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Does anyone have any previous experience with, I don't know, anything related to this topic, researching pigeons or birds or wildlife tracking, anything like this?
Well, sorry, but I have a friend who is like, she has very strong phobia from birds in general. And when she was living here in Vienna, she hated the pigeons so badly. So I'm dedicated this topic to her. Hope she feels very special.
Yeah, I don't have any experience with pigeons, but I do have experience studying rats in France at the end of the Renaissance. And it was following the plague And so there was a new phobia of rats. And once it was really when rats first got identified as pests, and it became a business to exterminate them. So yeah, it's an interesting thing now that the city wants to track pigeons. What do they want to track them for? I'm really interested.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if the city wants to track them.
That's just what I hear. Rumor has it.
Well, what I could say is, to me, pigeons always feel like they have the idea that they rule the world, because always when I'm on my bike, they don't get out of the way.
And they shit on your head.
Also.
I once ran over a pigeon with my bike.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That really happened. But the pigeon survived. So I don't think we got any
last like clean damage. Guillotine or what?
Yeah, like I was driving, and then the pigeon, you know how they like sometimes are very suicidal and fly like really low?
Like at your tires.
Or your tire. And then I was a bit faster than the pigeon expected. I ran over it, but it survived. So.
Wow.
But isn't this like pigeons and this type of birds in general, they act suicidal if they're sick, so they want to kill themselves
or not to suffer? Exactly. How dramatic.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, Borny. It is that way, actually. That's what science tells us.
Yeah, I think Team Bananas is already having a good starting point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have to say, it sounds like both teams have some good ideas with where to take this.
I didn't have any idea. I just told you that I ran over a pigeon with my bike.
I don't think that's some sort of personal experience.
Is running over pigeons scientific practice?
We'll have to consult some ethics policies and responsible research, but I don't know. I don't know how that's going to fly. So now that we have randomly chosen our topic and done the big reveal, each team will have 2 weeks to research pigeons and the tracking of pigeons in Vienna. And then we will come back together and talk about what you guys found, kind of what spin each team put on the research, and any interesting facts that you're going to share with us.
Okay, so now fast forward 3 weeks to today. Team Cherry and Team Banana have been working hard doing research and preparing for our big discussion. Both teams are excited to share what they have found, and I can't wait to hear the different paths they took with their research. We're going to have roughly 10-minute presentations from each team about their research and the direction they took, and then we'll come together to have a bigger discussion. So without any further ado, let's hear about the research. Team Banana, I'll hand it off to you guys first.
Thank you very much, Julia. Well, pigeons have obviously played an important role in the human history, and nowadays somehow there is an entire industry dedicated to their removal from urban areas. But let's start with the pigeon 101 lesson. So the pigeon was a symbol of the ancient fertility and love goddesses in Mesopotamia, Greece, and the Roman Empire. And it also represents the Holy Spirit of the Christian, symbolizing the reconciliation between God and man. And guess what? White doves that are a world symbol for peace are actually pigeons. So pigeons were also one of the first animals to be domesticated. And Darwin, in his book Origin of Species, reflects on that as he uses pigeons as an example of natural selection. As one various breeds come from one species. Also, pigeons were a status symbol in the 16th and 17th century in Europe. People who were rich were building houses for pigeons. And there is actually such a columbary or dove cote in Vienna as well. It's built approximately at the same time in the middle 18th century. So you can go check it out at the Schönbrunn Park. And what is our main association with pigeons? Probably that they used to be messengers during the World War I and World War II. And they're extremely reliable when it comes to flying back home. So how pigeons orient themselves and manage to go back home is the biggest mystery so far. There is a professor called Werner Bingmann from the Bowling Green State University. He actually has a primary research interest in how birds, in particular homing pigeons, map locations and navigate space and time with their hippocampus. So he decided to test a few theories and to figure out what makes pigeons such good flying back home animals. So what he did is take a bunch of pigeons and apply to them the following theories. He thought that it's either the magnetic field that helps them orient themselves or the sense of smell. So he put a magnet on the back of some pigeons in order to disturb their ability to focus on the magnetic fields. And on other pigeons, he used medicine to numb temporarily their nostrils so they cannot smell the scents. And he used a parameter of around 50 kilometers to in a completely unfamiliar environment to let them free and to see how they're gonna go home. Of course, they had attached GPS devices so you can track it. And it was extremely interesting experiment because he figured out that the pigeons who had magnets on them, they were super confused at the beginning, but quickly corrected themselves and got in the right direction. And the ones who had their nostrils numbed were extremely disoriented and they couldn't find the way back home for a while. And the moral of the story is that pigeons actually learn how different odors are distributed in space and compare the odor of home with the surrounding smell. How cool is that? So yeah, pigeons are quite awesome. I kind of admit that I've been neglecting them for a while, but it turns out that they can fly with up to 100 kilometers per hour, which means basically that they can cross from one side of Vienna to the other for less than 15 minutes. Another interesting fact that we found about pigeons is that they actually mate for life and both parents are equally taking care of the babies. They're very loving and very caring parents. And when they work in pairs, they are kind of stronger and that helps them survive. And nowadays, we're domesticating pigeons mostly for selective breeding. Exhibitions of special breeds of pigeons is a really big thing in Asia. In some parts of Germany, it's a very expensive hobby. And also in the USA, pigeon racing is also a thing, but it's been investigated by PETA, for example, because it's not very good for the pigeons in general. They're not treated as they're supposed to. So luckily, pigeons are bred and kept in Austria primarily for bird exhibitions, and pigeon sports are less popular. So we actually conducted an interview with Dr. Christian Fellner from the Tierschutzombudsstelle in Wien, which represents the interests of animals as an independent body in Vienna and seeks to raise awareness for animal welfare among the general public and especially young people. So Dr. Fellner is an expert that has dedicated over 10 years of his life researching pigeons and creating a strategy on adapting the urban environment to their needs and to find a way to protect them in urban areas. So he developed a 6-step concept on pigeons in Vienna, focused on the way the city takes care of them. It's focused on reducing their feeding, designing pigeon protection in line with animal welfare, closing mass breeders and finding alternative forms, optimizing the construction planning, and of course, helping sick and injured pigeons. He's focusing more on the negative effects of feeding pigeons on the streets. Like pigeon feeding, he says, is a misunderstood law for animals. So pigeons that are not fed are kind of living in small family groups and they're always on the move. They're very mobile and they do not bother anybody. So they are independent and extremely adaptable. And pigeons that we see on the streets, they're fed regularly and they always sit in the same place in hundreds and they wait for the next feed delivery. The young animals never learn to actually and actively look for food, so they become completely dependent on people and live an unworthy existence. Due to the massive feeding, the pigeon population has increased significantly in the recent decades, and this creates a list of issues and discomfort for people living in urban areas in regard to noise and hygiene. And pigeons are also breeding now much more because they're fed enough. Interesting fact that Dr. Fellner mentioned is that the pigeons in Vienna have been counted twice, once in 1994, and they were around 200,000. And the last counting was in 2006, and they were 150,000. And here is what he would want to tell us about pigeons and how fascinating species they are.
Tauben sind sehr intelligente Tiere, ist gar keine Frage. Sie haben es schon erwähnt, also über wissenschaftliche Untersuchungen hat man das festgestellt, aber man braucht gar nicht wissenschaftlich untersuchen. Es ist einfach die logische Schlussfolgerung. Tiere, die sich in einem Lebensbereich wie der Großstadt behaupten können, müssen Generalisten sein. Generalisten sind in der Lage, unterschiedlichste Lebensbedingungen für sich positiv zu nutzen. Und das erfordert eine gewisse Flexibilität und Intelligenz. Sie müssen Schlussfolgerungen ziehen können, wie kann ich mit welcher Situation umgehen.
Yeah, sorry for the non-German speakers, but after all, we are in Vienna. To sum up what Dr. Fellner says, he uses a very interesting word to describe pigeons, that they're generalist, and this unites their intelligence and their adaptivity and all the skills they have in order to survive in almost any kind of conditions. But we're going to elaborate more on that later on in the discussion. And last but not least, we would kindly ask you to keep in mind that in a big city like Vienna, sick or injured pigeons are found every day. There is a wild animal hotline where you can report for sick and injured pigeons or any kind of animals, and you can report there daily. The number is 01-4000-49090. Thank you, guys.
After Roberta presented some key findings and some very intriguing facts about the rats of the air, also known as pigeons, I now want to continue with the analytical part, because after all, we're a scientific SDS podcast, so we want to look at the relations between science, technology, and society, and we need a fitting theory for that, a theory that can adapt to all these facts about pigeons and yield insights that go beyond those facts. And here is where Donna Haraway comes in. So Donna Haraway is a feminist scholar. She did a lot of stuff on nature, biology, and technology. And she's generally focused on the relation between nature and culture. She's probably best known for the Cyborg Manifesto, which is heavily cited also in pop culture. So the cyborg is a hybrid being. It's both human and technology, and it goes beyond that separation. We kind of had the feeling that the pigeon might be somewhat similar to the cyborg. And then we digged a little deeper into our memory, and we remembered Haraway, she did something on dogs. So, but this was basically all we knew. So we went on to read that stuff. What I'm going to present is coming from her Companion Species Manifesto. It was released in 2003. And yeah, it's about dogs as companion species. We just wanted to see if dogs are maybe a little bit like pigeons. And it turns out they are. What is a companion species? It's very similar to the cyborg, but it goes beyond the cyborg. So the cyborg is a companion species, and so are dogs. They're both cobbled together in some way, so they consist of many aspects. Basically, companion species are all about the ways humans and non-human beings live together. Two key concepts of Haraway are cohabitation and coevolution,
And these terms also point to the fact that different species evolve together and also live together. The general framework of Haraway is the concept of nature-culture written together. It's one word. So this points to her general outset that nature and culture are not to be separated. So nature is always cultural, and culture is always to some point natural and determined by biology. So the other team is already laughing, and maybe they found something similar to us. So Haraway describes agency to the pigeons, and to not to the pigeons specifically, but to companion species. So for her, agency is not only something humans have, but all kinds of bestiary. So how can we conceptualize the way different species live together? And we can do that via the concept of significant otherness. So Haraway is not ignorant. She knows that dogs or pigeons and humans are very different. But nevertheless, they live together. And significant otherness means that species live together while recognizing their essential differences. If we want to study the way humans and pigeons live together, we have to tell a story. And that story is about co-history and co-evolution. And this history is not a singular history. It encompasses many different histories, and it can be told in many ways. These histories are not always nice. So with dogs, they're not only cute pets, but they're also used as weapons. So they're pigeons throughout history. They delivered militaristic messages and so on. And there's also quite a lot of abuse, like people hunting pigeons and or killing them for fun. So she says, cohabitating does not mean fuzzy and touchy-feely. It's the same with dogs as is it with pigeons. Regarding co-evolution, she highlights the importance of time scales. So different species have different time scales. Humans live very long, and they don't breed that often, if you want to say it like that. But feral pigeons do. They breed 6 times a year. So if you want to tell like a history of domestication or an origin story of pigeons and humans living together, we have to tell this history in regards to these different timescales, and also not only from human perspective, but also from the perspective of the birds. So we might not be in control as humans. Like we cannot control the pigeons' poop or where they feed or where they breed, but we can only like influence that to some degree. We have to run around many corners to influence the pigeons, and the pigeons also have to adapt to our way of living constantly. We're generalists. We constantly need to find spaces to breed and so on. And Costa is now presenting our main takeaways.
Thank you, Borny, for this interesting theoretical account. We could take a lot of this theory and mainly the significant otherness as a thing useful for our own research. So I'm going to present the main takeaways now. First of all, and as we heard from Robbie and Borny, it is not the pigeons' fault alone that there are some problems, at least. Indeed, humans are partly responsible for the pigeons being such an annoyance in urban environments. Let's again listen to what Dr. Fellner said about this.
Also, aus der Sicht der Tierschutzombudsstelle ist es für die Tauben besser, sie nicht zu füttern, weil das Füttern die Tiere abhängig macht von dieser Futterversorgung und im Endeffekt die Jungtiere nie lernen, selbstständig Futter zu suchen. Der zweite Punkt eben, dass eben das Nistplatzangebot im Vergleich zum Futterangebot natürlich zu niedrig ist. es wird immer weniger. Und je mehr gefüttert wird, umso stärker ist die Diskrepanz zwischen bestehendem Taubenbestand und den vorhandenen Nistplätzen. Alles das sind schlechte Punkte für die Tauben und dementsprechend wäre es besser, auf das Taubenfüttern zu verzichten. Also es wird schlechter, glaube ich.
So what Dr. Fellner is basically saying is don't feed the pigeons. They will get dependent on humans and they will never learn to live on their own. And so he's strongly advocating to not do this. They will never be able to breed and there are not enough breeding spaces compared to feeding quantities. So don't feed the pigeons. Regarding theories, we found astonishing that the story of cohabitation between humans and pigeons is very complex. The relations between the two are not as clear-cut as one might think. Instead, urban areas could and should provide living conditions for both. Neither extreme love nor hate, in the end, is a solution of the pigeon problem, so to say. So what is crucial to us is that it's not the bird's fault alone. You must know that. Second, while researching, we found that tracking back the history of the domestication of pigeons to its origins might be too simplistic. This leaves out an important part of the whole story. That is, that we should also reflect on how human living conditions, architecture, and experiences in relation to the domestication of the pigeons have changed over the centuries. The third point we found interesting is that regarding the very topic of tracking pigeons that frames this episode and our research, we found interesting that you can understand the topic in different ways. The human practice of tracking pigeons indeed can be approached from various angles. We can physically track pigeons, we can track their tracks, for example their poop, we can track their flying routes, we can track their history, and we can track evolutionary strategies and so forth. In each of these instances, we should take the concept of nature culture by Donna Haraway seriously, also tracking the ways human society changes and behaves. The fourth point we found, and really important, is pigeons are not stupid. That is the main thing. Pigeons are not stupid. Instead, they are very smart. As generalists, and we heard that earlier, they adapted to a variety of hostile environments over the centuries and are still doing so today. From an SDS perspective, one can argue that they have agencies just as humans do. That means they form alliances with animal rights activists, feeders, ethics, trash cans, and other human and non-human actors in their environments. So in the end, overtly criticizing pigeons for their way of living also tells us something about our own shortcomings as humans. Most importantly, because sometimes it is our own behaviors and actions that lead to the problems we call problems. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Team Banana. I think pigeons get a pretty bad rep. I think you referenced them as the rat of the sky earlier, and they get a rep for being pretty dumb. But I think you have pointed out a lot of kind of the untold stories of pigeons, and we'll talk about that more later. But now let's get to Team Cherry's presentation. And I think they've taken a bit of a different approach to their presentation, so they're going to give us a bit of an explanation on that.
Right. Thanks, Julia. So as Costa kind of got to the last part when we talked about problems, we chose to focus in on one of those aspects, particularly how problems get made in the first place. We kind of took on acting roles and all assumed a character to tell the story of the problem in the first place. And so we put together a project of telling a story, and that's what you're about to hear now.
One major fault that the pigeons have, if you hurt them, they don't cry.
All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park.
there's no gray zone. It's only black and white. You have the people who hate those animals, and you have the people who say those animals have a right to live too, and they are not some kind of thing, and you have to care for them.
I am just sitting outside in the sun, reading a book, and guess what? A pigeon shits on my head.
I work for the city of Vienna. You know what I did yesterday? I scraped pigeon shit off a statue for 4 hours.
You know what's even more annoying about riding a bike in Vienna than cars that don't see you? Pigeons that don't see you. Where can I turn in a pigeon carcass?
Oh, Jesus, look at that one. It's so disgusting.
Look at this poor bastard. It's barely holding on.
I think this pigeon weighs more than my cat.
How can he even carry himself on one leg?
Someone should really just put this thing out of its misery.
I own 37 apartments across Vienna. A lady just called. Never met her. She wants me to get rid of the pigeons in front of her window. Who does she think I am? God?
Greetings, this is Harry with Kat and Patrick, and together we are Team Cherry. We will now tell you the story of the pigeon problem.
The problems of pigeons are pretty clear, but do pigeons really deserve such a bad rap? I mean, did you know that pigeons are actually pretty smart? They pass the mirror test, for example, which means that they are able to recognize themselves in the mirror and thus have consciousness. And did you know that they recognize faces of the people that feed them in the park? And did you know that they know how to get home? They can fly back and forth between places up to 1,000 kilometers apart. Is it then really any surprise that they were once used as messengers? They were even used in the Second World War, where they saved thousands of lives bringing messages to the front lines. With all this in mind, it's really hard to fathom that pigeons are a problem at all. So, what happened?
So from what I've heard, the pigeons that we have today aren't the pigeons who were here before us. They weren't even the pigeons that people had a couple hundred years ago. Like, people used to keep these things in their house as pets. Some people even ate them. Heck, I've heard some people still eat them. Europeans, they brought them all over the world. There's 3 different groups of pigeons. Wild pigeons, who I guarantee are quite hard to find. Domesticated pigeons, used for racing.
Fun fact, did you know that in the UK, pigeon racing was the first sport that was allowed again after the lockdown, the corona lockdown?
Right. So, again, there's 3 types of pigeons. Those wild ones, the ones people race, and the ones that shit on your head. Now, the shitters, they mostly come from the domesticated pigeons. The pigeons that got away. And these are the pigeons that you and I see. And those pigeons are called feral pigeons.
So, does that mean that we made the pigeons?
Slow down, dude. What do you mean?
I mean that, like you said, we domesticated these things. They didn't exist before us like they do now. We put them in our houses.
So, you mean it's more like cats and dogs than wild animals?
Yeah, kind of. Except now we don't need them anymore. They're just out and about. They're not exactly the easiest pets to keep, like chickens are. I mean, pigeons can fly and do so well, but chickens don't really.
Right. So, like, where do we go from here? What do we do with the pigeons?
Well, to me, it would make sense that since we made the pigeons, we domesticated the pigeons, then it would also be our responsibility to take care of them, right? I mean, they're not really going anywhere right now.
Yeah, cool. Like, that sounds nice and all, but pigeons are still a problem for many cities and the people that live in those cities. How does one take care of pigeons? I mean, I see old ladies sometimes at the park that feed them, but really, I don't.
Yeah, maybe I can say something about that. So recently, I sat down with a guy from the Vienna NGO Tierschutzverein, which is basically like an animal rights organization. And by the way, they also run an animal shelter where you can adopt cats and dogs if you're interested. So they constantly fight with the city government about animal issues. And of course, they also have an argument about the correct or like the ethical treatments of these pigeons. So I will play you now part what he said about the current pigeon management of the city of Vienna. And I also talked to him about what a good pigeon management would look like.
Yeah, you could say those the pigeons are the rats of the sky is some sort of propaganda by the city of Vienna. What you have now, right now in Vienna, is a big population of sick birds, so to speak. And what you would get with a professional pigeon management is a smaller, healthier population.
So first of all, there are too many pigeons in Vienna. And right now, all of those pigeons, they basically don't eat right. They live off our garbage. So what we throw away, they eat. This is a catastrophe basically for their digestive system, which is why they shit everywhere. So that's where the shitting problem comes from. They have constant diarrhea. So the city of Vienna, instead of taking over the feeding, they basically ignore the pigeons. So they even go as far as restricting the feeding. So you get a fine for littering if you are caught by a policeman feeding a pigeon. So that's why Vienna's pigeons are basically hungry all the time and die from starvation also a lot of the time.
Right. But I mean, that kind of seems like the point, like not to be an asshole or anything.
Too late, bro.
Right, Pat. But if we stop feeding them cat, then won't the problem just go away?
You mean like starving them to death?
Well, kind of.
So the thing is, Harry, not feeding them doesn't necessarily mean that you will end up with less pigeons.
Wait, what? Can you explain that to me?
So basically, if the pigeon feels the pressure and is starving, it will produce more offspring instead of less, because evolutionarily, this gives her, this gives the pigeon an advantage, because more offspring means more chance of survival and maybe more chance of like a one of their offspring going away a bit further and finding food there. So what the city of Vienna wants to do is restricting the population by not feeding them. But what it actually does is like multiplying the population because they're not feeding them.
So I kind of get it. That means that they don't really have anything to do. Does that mean that they're just having a lot more pigeon sex?
I don't know if they just have more sex or if they just produce more eggs. The expert didn't tell me the reason, but I guess it's kind of a little bit of both. It's just like evolution taking care of itself as it does.
Gotcha. So then maybe it is kind of like Patrick said, maybe it is kind of our responsibility. So what do we do?
According to the expert that I asked, there is like three things that you have to do. And these three things are surprisingly easy. So in order for a pigeon to be happy, it first of all needs correct food. So a pigeon ideally eats grain food and not garbage food that we throw it. So it would prefer eating like corn and stuff. And it would also prefer that to the garbage food that it has now. The second thing the pigeon needs is a nice little cozy home. So the city would have to provide pigeonaries or pigeon lofts for the city, for the pigeons to roost in. And the third thing it needs would be like controlling the size of the population. And you can do that easily if you provide the home, because if you have, if the pigeons all live in a pigeon loft, they also breed their eggs there. So you basically, what you do to restrict the population size is replace their real eggs with dummy eggs or with fake eggs so that they can still sit on the eggs and still feel happy and still feel useful, but the eggs in the end never hatch. And in this way, you can also restrict the population size pretty easily, according to the expert. What he said also is that this is a very cheap solution, because in the end, this pigeonaries or pigeon loft would be controlled and monitored by volunteers. He said that there is actually a lot of pigeon enthusiasts out there who would be very happy to take over that job. So that's basically what an ideal pigeon management would look like.
So basically what I got from this is that humans need to help out with the switching of the eggs. They need to help out with procuring and getting the right food. And they need to help out with getting the right habitat. How are we even supposed to know if all this stuff is working or not? It seems like they're pretty reliant on humans.
Well, this is actually where it gets really interesting, because this is where the monitoring of the pigeons comes in. What we could do, just to give an example, is to track a certain amount of pigeons after we've established those pigeon lofts, let's call them like that. And then we can see whether the pigeons are actually going to the loft to hatch their eggs there, to eat there. And then we can also observe the pigeons by, for example, placing cameras in there, as in how to track the process of hatching. Will they still hatch the eggs when they are dummy eggs, or will this make the pigeon unhappy, to call it like that?
Okay, then, but that brings me to a point then, that they can't live without us, right? Pigeons really can't live independently of humans, can they?
Well, this is kind of like, what was first, the pigeon or the egg? Because they could probably live independently from us, but we would never be there to monitor that, because if we are gone, then there is nobody to look after that. So it kind of, the question, kind of asking the question that way, kind of doesn't really make sense. But in the end, well, what is important here and what you can see from that is that all of our relations in a way to animals, and not only to pigeons, but also to other animals or to plants, they are in the end what they are. And we can know them differently, because humans, after all, order all the planet and order everything that's around us, even if that's just in our head. So there is basically, I want to say that there is no such division like nature and culture, because we are a part of nature and nature is in a way a part of culture.
So there is no pigeon problem. There's just a human problem.
Thank you so much, Team Cherry, for your storytelling presentation. I think you've given us a really good insight on the pigeon problem, or maybe now the human problem, as we'll call it. Both of your presentations were really great, and I think we can draw a lot of parallels between them, especially your Team Cherry, your ending points of nature and culture. I mean, they fit really well within the theories of Donna Haraway that Team Banana talked about, which is pretty cool, kind of to draw these similarities and show the STS theories that kind of make sense in these places you might not expect them. I'm kind of interested, what do you guys think about where the other team went with their research? I mean, you both started with the same topic, probably kind of the same process, just doing initial research, and then kind of went in some ways similar ways, but also different ways. What are your initial reactions?
Yeah, although we overlap here and there, I think in general we are more complementing each other's findings.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah, that was amazing. I really enjoyed listening to all your different angles you put in and the drive you put to the topic, and especially the problem-centered approach, like this case study approach. I really loved it.
But I think we have like different positions on the pigeon loft. Because the result of our research, and especially from the interview Robbie did, was that pigeon lofts are not a solution that can be easily scaled up.
Yeah, this is...
That's right.
This is, we kind of, by coincidence, interviewed the two opposing sides of the same beef that has been going on for years, actually, because this animal rights NGO that we spoke to, they have been fighting with the city for years on more issues than just on pigeons. So basically every animal species that exists in Vienna, they fight about it. Which is funny, because they are both, in a way, they are both, I think, right. But basically what my expert said, that this is easily upscalable. So if you put a pigeon loft in every park in Vienna and you have like two or three volunteers who manage this loft and who monitor the pigeons, this would work as a charm. He also mentioned some examples in German cities where this apparently works really well. Yeah, the thing is that there is, I mean, the science, it's not really there. So the home pigeon, like the feral pigeons that are in the city, they are really understudied considering that there are so many of them. But also the scientific literature we checked, maybe Harry can talk some bit more about that, but hardly any scientist is even interested in studying them. I guess the topic is just not that sexy as like pigeons finding their way home from thousands of kilometers away.
Yeah, so I don't know what you guys found, but yeah, we can really see here how like whatever expert you ask, they're going to come up with inevitably with some solutions. And we can really see a clear case here about how values get inscribed into the solutions that they give. So what might be harder than the actual solutions, the material aspects of it, like building these certain pigeon things, would be the values that are expected to be upheld by a number of people, for instance, pigeon enthusiasts finding them. So this value might be more expected from the perspective of the expert that we asked versus somebody that works for the city. And on the scientific literature, I think the focus, I don't know what you guys were able to find, but tends to be on the cognitive side of things. For instance, seeing how smart pigeons are, there's not really much literature focused on solutions to pigeon control. I mean, there was at some point about tracking them and everything, but it seems like people understand pigeons are here to stay in the form that they are, right? And that there's only so much you can do because it is a human problem in cities that just won't go away overnight.
Maybe that's the point, because the problem is so mundane in a way that nobody really thinks of doing proper research on it.
But I think that's also like connected to the problem of separation Haraway talks about. Yeah. Like pigeons, they are animals, therefore they belong to nature, and they are studied by scientists that study nature. And they live in society, and society is cultural, and so society is studied by scientists who study culture. And in order to tackle that so-called pigeon problem, like you would need a really strong form of interdisciplinarity, it seems, to cover that problem. But that also brings all these problems of interdisciplinarity with it. So like who should be more dominant? Like the biologistic view or the sociologist view?
And to my estimation, those tend to be value judgments above everything else. You know, what do you include, what do you not include, what's more important, what's less important.
And people might not even realize that there's a problem in the first place. At least that was what my guy said. The problems that they have with the pigeons is that they don't cry when they are not fine. So when a cat's starving on the street, it will give some signal and it will like make itself noticed. But the pigeons, they don't really say anything. So people don't even realize that there is a problem and that the pigeons are constantly starving.
Right. Like we had that conversation. What if the 150,000 pigeons of Vienna were screaming because they're hurting? I think then people might think about that there is a different type of pigeon problem and that there's 150,000 sick birds flying around rather than that they're just in my way and committing suicide into my bike wheels or pooping on my head.
You know, when I was interviewing our expert, I actually discussed this with him that pigeons are not really a field that's interesting for many scientists, especially in social sciences. And I also asked him if there are any citizen science projects and stuff like that. For those of you who don't know, citizen science are projects where normal citizens that are non-experts could contribute to scientific findings. And the answer, of course, was no. We don't have this kind of stuff here in Vienna. But a very interesting discussion was exactly the symbiosis of pigeons and humans and how they're co-producing the urban environment. So something very interesting Dr. Felna said was that we simply need to start accepting pigeons as part of our ecosystem, because we're familiar with a lot of animals. For example, we know what dogs do, we know how cats behave, but there are so many other species that we're surrounded by on a daily basis in the urban areas, and we have zero information about how their little communities function.
A lot of what we can take away is sort of what we can do as a society, whether it's educating ourselves on the pigeon problem or what you can do in the form of citizen activism. But just before we wrap it up, we're getting kind of to the end here. I want to know what do you guys think about this topic? Was it a good topic, bad topic, hard to research, fun to research? What do you think?
I would say that that it was quite a surprising topic.
Yeah.
Most of all, in the beginning, I think most of you didn't really have a connection with pigeons at all, and I really liked it that you guys brought up Donna Haraway. I was always like, why is this woman talking about her dog? And now, I get how animals can also kind of be treated as being a technology.
And yeah, awesome. All of a sudden it clicked.
Right. Yeah, it all got together.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed watching all the documentaries about pigeons and researching a little. And also the interview Robbie did was pretty interesting to listen to and to hear what the guy had to tell us about this complexity of human and pigeon relations. It's not that easy. It's not that clear cut, and we need to work on different angles and different perspectives deal with the so-called pigeon problem.
Mm-hmm. And now I have so much appreciation, not only about the pigeons, but also about the people who are working with animals and who are researching this kind of things.
I think it was the perfect topic to start with. It was funny.
Yeah.
It was location-based. It was actually pretty interesting. So, dear listeners, if you have something similar to this, maybe not on rats, shoot it.
So thanks so much to all of our listeners for tuning in to our first official episode of the Science Slot Machine podcast. We're really excited to get the first one out to you, and we can't wait to continue doing them. So don't forget to send in some more topics and let us know what you thought of our first episode. Now it's time to send us your topics. Pick whatever comes to your mind. We will deal with it, even if it's obscure or very niche. Challenge us. Simply send us an email at scienceslotmachine@gmail.com. Again, it's scienceslotmachine@gmail.com. No spaces. We look forward to hearing from you.